Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. It is a cold, rainy Sunday. The Lakers have just lost to the Philadelphia 76ers. Lakers Twitter is up in arms. There are some who think Luke can do no wrong and that every Lakers shortcoming has something to do with something that isn't going on with Luke. And then there are others who want to blame Luke for everything. And as you would expect, there is very little room in the middle for nuanced and decent conversation. So that's where we start today's podcast. I'm not going to get into the Luke thing. I'm sure it'll be asked at some point in these questions. My big thing with Luke is, how long have we had these same gripes with him, right? Like, we know that when injuries set in and when you have roster turnover that Luke has dealt with and a flawed roster that Luke has dealt with that his job is made a lot more difficult than it probably should have been made. But he hasn't necessarily done very much to help himself in beyond the things that he does defensively. Look, I think the fact that the Lakers have for pretty much the entirety of his time as the Lakers coach, because they have played defense at the level that they have and exceeded expectations the way that they have with him there, I think that speaks very well to his ability to communicate, his strategic understanding of that half of the game, and his ability to relate to players and get them to buy in to defend and play hard the way that they have over the extent of his time as a coach. That said, we've had these same complaints for 3 years now, where his lineups are stupid, his offensive system leaves a lot to be desired, and his coaching staff is a bunch of his buddies from college. So I'm sorry, man. Like, you made your bed. If he gets let go, I think it will be both fair and unfair. It will be unfair because the Lakers saddled him with a roster that didn't make very much sense. He was able to get them to play pretty good basketball, and then injury set in. And then he was shown the door without ever really having gotten any full support from Magic and Pelinka and from LeBron. So he was dealt a tough, if not impossible, hand. But then he went and played that hand poorly, right? Like if we were to use the poker analogy, let's say Luke was dealt not 2-7 offsuit. I don't think he was dealt the worst hand out there. But let's say he got like pocket sixes, right? And when you get pocket sixes, you want to play that aggressively to take as much out as you possibly can against you. So you play those pocket sixes, you make some type of pre-flop bet. Well, Luke didn't do that. He checked on pocket sixes. And then on the flop, let's say Luke hit like there are two pairs out there. So let's say, but not aces or something like that. Not face cards. Let's say there are two, sevens or fives or something like that out there. And upon seeing that, Luke again checked, right? Chances are he probably still has the best hand at two pair with whatever the extra card is out there. But he doesn't do that, right? He doesn't bet extra to eliminate any and all other hands that might be out there. And then let's say a face card is thrown out there, like probably an ace or a king. Chances are, whoever he went up against, if he had bet preflop, the people who'd be up against would probably have an ace or a king, right? But because he didn't bet preflop, and because he didn't bet the flop, now there's literally no way to know what's coming next, right? So that ace hits or that king hits or something like that, and chances are somebody else out there now has a better hand than he does. And that's what I mean with Monty Williams. Monty Williams is the better hand here. Monty Williams is the better coach, probably. And he makes more sense for the Lakers. But Monty Williams wouldn't have had that opportunity to step in had Luke played pre-flop and the actual flop better. I hope this all makes sense. It's a convoluted analogy. But basically, what it comes down to is Luke had the opportunity to win this job and to keep this job. Maybe he didn't. Who knows, right? Just like with pocket sixes, sometimes you get those pocket sixes and it's just not going to work out no matter what. But he had an opportunity to win over this job, win over LeBron, win over Magic, win over Pelinka. And I don't think he's done enough to do that. So I don't think he gets fired after this Philadelphia game. It probably didn't help his cause very much that Magic was in the building in Philadelphia while Luke went with lineups that didn't have any of Kuzma, LeBron, or Ingram out there. That probably is going to leave a sour taste in Magic's mouth. But overall, if this is what it comes down to, if this is the end of Luke Walton, I'm going to remember him as a coach who has the potential to be a very good coach, or at least a good coach, but whose principled stances in certain aspects of the game made it so that unless he doesn't rethink those things, he won't be. He has some huge flaws in his ability as a coach, and he needs to address those if he ever wants to fully live up to, at one point, being the hottest commodity on the free agent coaches market. That'll do it for this first segment. There are a few fewer questions than usual. And one thing that I've been made aware of that for some stupid reason I hadn't really thought of it before, but if you're an Android user, you can't really leave iTunes reviews. So I'm going to find a way to get you, those of you who aren't iTunes listeners, a way to have your voice heard on this show as well. So don't think that I'm not thinking of that. I'm going to take a quick second, and when we come back, I'm going to answer your guys' questions. All right, the first question here comes from QBreezy12, friend of the show. At almost 2 years in, how do you feel about Magic? I'm really glad we got LeBron, but I think that most everything else has been subpar. Is the only thing he has to offer charisma? Also, congrats on your exciting news. Thanks. Jen's showing. It's wild. She has a little bit of a bump. It's crazy. All right, Pete and I and even Harrison, we talked a lot about Magic on Friday's show. And basically, if you think of the front office as separated between big things and small things, then Magic has done an okay job. I'd say he's like 1 for 3, which is okay, right? If you're a baseball batter, if you're an MLB batter and you're hitting .333, then you're a Hall of Famer. But if you're a spot up shooter, and you're shooting 33%, then you're probably, you know, like from three, then you're all right, but you would like to do a little bit better. He does not have Paul George in his employ. He does not currently have Anthony Davis in his employ. He does have LeBron James in his employ. He drafted Lonzo Ball. And no matter what the reports were out there was that one random report that the buses pushed Magic Johnson to draft Lonzo over De'Aaron Fox. I think that was very clearly a favor done to Magic in the media that I didn't put much stock into. At the end of the day, it was Magic's call, and he did make the decision to draft Lonzo Ball. So it doesn't matter what he thought or how he felt or whatever. That doesn't really matter to me. And we also know this about the Buss family, that they are hands off, right? They played, Genie plays things very hands off. And had Magic really put his foot down and said, no, I want to pass on Lonzo Ball and I want to draft De'Aaron Fox, chances are Genie rolls with that. But But the Lakers drafted Lonzo Ball. Magic was at the helm when they drafted Lonzo Ball. And I don't care what kind of reports come out since. That's not... I'm just not rolling with it. So I would say Magic is doing okay so far. And just like the big things type of decisions. Where I would like him to get better is I want him to recognize his own shortcomings. He's not around the team all the time. And as such, he needs to trust those people who he leaves in charge when he isn't around. He overruled the scouting department that has given the Lakers Kyle Kuzma, that has given the Lakers Josh Hart, that, you know, found those gems late-ish in the draft. He overrode those guys and drafted Mo Wagner, who can't get on the court right now unless it's garbage time. And maybe that's a Luke thing. Maybe that's a Wagner thing. Maybe it's a team doctor's thing because Wagner missed as much time as he did heading into the season. But a first-round pick that was a very clear Magic thing has not worked out so far. And I think what we're going to come back to at some point is, could that asset have been used in a different way that helps a team that needed contributors right away? And I don't think that's necessarily played out in a way that looks good for Magic, seeing as that was a very much a Magic Johnson pick. So what I want Magic to figure out is, he can look at his own experience. He's one of the most successful businessmen that come from the professional athlete mold, right? It's like it's Magic, and it's Michael Jordan, and it's Magic in the NBA. Roger Staubach, oddly enough, is like a real estate mogul in Texas. I think Troy Aikman is doing really well for himself in that respect too. John Elway has a ton of like car dealerships that have really panned out for him. So Magic is in that stratosphere of most successful business people who come from professional sports. What I want him to do is look at that success and figure out why that happened. And what he would figure out is he throws money at the situation because that's what he has to offer. He allows people he trusts to make decisions that help his money grow, help his investments grow. And he plays it hands off. Look at the Dodgers. He and the ownership group that owns the Dodgers trust Andrew Friedman to make the Dodgers make sense as best they can. And look, I have gripes with the Dodgers. Like, it's beyond stupid to me that they don't currently have either Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, given what the market has panned out to be for those guys. And so I have gripes with that, but they do have all these division titles in a row. They have been to two World Series in a way that I never thought that they would be able to. But Magic has ignored the way that he was successful in those ways. His hubris has gotten the better of him in basketball, where he thinks, I am a successful basketball player. I'm maybe one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And therefore, I just know more about basketball than people who I could be employing to do the grunt work here. And he's not allowing that to happen. And I think that's having a negative impact on the organization. If Magic takes a step back and is actually just kind of the face of the franchise and just the charisma of the franchise in the front office, then I think there's a really good way that could actually start to make sense for what the Lakers need him to be. But until that actually happens, I think the Lakers are going to Laker fans are going to continue to be annoyed by the way that things play out. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to rapid fire through your guys' questions for segment 3. Thank you guys again for sending those in, and like I said, I'm going to try to figure out a way to get your guys' questions who aren't iTunes users. I'm going to try to figure out a way for you guys to get your questions on the show as well. I'll be right back. All right, so this next question here is a post-trade deadline question about Anthony Davis. This is from King Wadester. Look, I want Anthony Davis just as much as the next guy, but I do want to keep at least one of our three young studs. If the Lakers do make a trade, how likely do you think it is that we can keep at least one of Ball, Ingram, or Kuzma? Also, I'd want to keep Ball. Who would you choose to keep and why? I would choose Ball just because I think there's a very clear path for him to be the type of point guard who he can make a lot of sense alongside other superstars in the lineup, right? So I think he makes the most sense there. Probably next would be Ingram because of his defense and his youth at this stage. LeBron isn't getting any older, and I think if you have somebody, if like Ingram reaches his upside and reaches his potential, then you have somebody who can actually really make a lot of sense and help LeBron in ways that others might not be able to. And then Kuzma, though it's close between Kuzma and Ingram. In terms of whether or not I think that that's a likely scenario, we'll see. The Lakers need to make the playoffs. Like, if the Lakers don't make the playoffs, they, being the kids in here, their stock will go into the offseason as low as it can possibly be. And, you know, because this is a young core that failed to make the playoffs despite having LeBron James on their roster. So I think if the Lakers don't make the playoffs, the Lakers are screwed. They wind up having to lose all three of those guys, not just for Anthony Davis, but in just about any trade that would help the Lakers immediately. If they do make the playoffs, then I think there's a chance that maybe one of those guys shows out in a way that makes it so they're hard to trade because they're just that good and the Lakers front office doesn't want to give up on them. Or they have added so much value to their own stock, their stock has improved so much that one of the other guys can stick around and the Pelicans are happy to just get one of the guys whose stock went up enough to make that trade work. So I think in the likeliest scenario, I think the Lakers do wind up moving all three of them for Anthony Davis this summer. But if they don't, it would be because they showed out in the playoffs, and the guy I would hope that the Lakers keep is Lonzo. Next question here comes from the Horned Lamb. Any chance the Lakers want to keep Lonzo out of an AD trade? And Magic made a phone call to LeVar basically saying, do your thing to disincentivize Nola from wanting him in a trade. No, I don't think Magic and LeVar are on particularly great terms. I think Magic just kind of ignores LeVar's presence for his own sanity. So I think LeVar was acting in his interest there to keep Lonzo in LA, and I don't think he was coached to do so. Next question comes from Vet57. Do you think there's validity to Windhorst comments to Rachel Nichols that the Pelicans never intended to trade to LA and their intention was to sabotage the Lakers team chemistry? If so, do you agree that the best move for LA would be to not make a single offer to AD in the summer and force them to trade AD to Ainge or whoever else for dirt cheap out of principle and go all out for him in 2020? Maybe he comes because he saw how hard we tried to get him. I think the Lakers still make an offer, though I do think that offer changes come this summer. As far as Windhorst's report, I don't see it. The Lakers, like Brad Turner was out there reporting the Lakers' offers, and that was very clearly from the Lakers' side of things. And why would the Lakers go out there and tell everybody that everybody was on the table, right? That doesn't play in Windhorst's, I guess, hypothesis here. Not fully a theory, but I don't think it was necessarily a report either. I do think for the Lakers, so Magic was asked after the game if he thought that the Pelicans negotiated in good faith, and he said no, they didn't. And I think there's truth to that. I think there really is. But neither did the Lakers. Their first offer, one of their first offers, was a lowball offer. And I think as soon as the negotiations went in that direction, Del Demps and the Pelicans just said I'm not interested. We're moving on. And they never really got back to the Lakers. And look, it's the Lakers who were trying to convince the Pelicans to send them the best player in the history of the Pelicans franchise. And therefore, if anybody is to complain about offers and negotiations in good faith, it's probably the Pelicans who said, look, it's bad enough that you guys tampered and Rich Paul is doing everything he can to strong arm Anthony Davis to the Lakers. But then you show up and you offer reportedly Lance Stephenson and Rajon Rondo and maybe one of the kids and a pick. And even if it's that is like the lowest of the low offers in the initial five offers that were reportedly made, like that's going to be the one that grabs their attention the most. It's not going to be the reasonable ones and then eventually the increased offers that were made as the trade deadline went along. The fact that any such offer was ever made probably turned off Dell Demps, and I can't quite blame him. I really can't, you know. Now, do I think it's potentially a mistake that Demps never really re-engaged and passed up on the Godfather offer? Hell yeah, that could potentially blow up in his face. As we've seen, like the Celtics, Jason Tatum, like maybe one day I'll get it with him. Maybe one day I'll understand what everybody sees then in that guy, that he's this transcendent player who would hold up trade negotiations with another team. Maybe one day I'll get that. Right now I don't. Right now I do not. And therefore, if I'm just being as objectively as I possibly can and outright objectivity, I think is a farce. I think it's something that we can't really even try to get to. But let's say I actually do get there. I still don't see it with Tatum. I really don't. Next question here comes from T3ZZO_87. Hey, Anthony, love the show. You, Harrison, Pete, Darius are all cool on Twitter also. Thanks, man. Thanks for following. It gets me through the night shift at work. My topic is Ingram versus Tatum. I feel Ingram's assessment in comparison to Tatum is a little unfair due to coaching and development. I feel the system Tatum was brought into a system was better suited to cater to his strength as far as spacing and ball movement with players that worked well with him. He was asked to do basically, all right, long story short, Tatum was brought up in a more ideal situation and showed out accordingly. And that isn't weighed into the assessment of those two guys' evaluations. I think there's a lot to that. But I also think that if you're a team that is looking to invest in one player over the other, right? If I was just to put those two players out there, I would probably say, all right, what talents do both guys bring to the table? So like Tatum being able to actually hit three pointers and potentially do so at a decent clip, both in terms of quality of percentage and quantity of shots taken, like that makes him a very valuable potential commodity. Ingram's length and athleticism as a defender will make him a very valuable commodity. But what we're learning in the modern NBA is you have to be an extreme case, an extreme outlier of value on defense to overcome being a negative value on offense. And I think there's legitimate question as to whether or not Ingram ever develops a skill set offensively to overcome his deficiencies elsewhere on that side of the court and make him a net neutral or a net positive player. Whereas like Tatum, I think all he has to be is a net neutral defensive player, and his offense is going to carry him into being a solid and net positive NBA player. That's the difference between those two guys right now. Now, maybe Tatum was given a role and was allowed to expand and grow into a role that makes a lot more sense for him in ways that Brandon Ingram has not been given. And I think that's a perfectly fair thing to bring up. But at some point, you have to figure out in your own system, if you're an NBA team, in your own system, which player do you believe to be more valuable or more malleable to the system that you're going to employ while he is there? Having said what I just said about Tatum, I still think that Tatum is a better prospect in that respect. I just don't think he's so much better than Ingram that he would hold up – trade talks elsewhere around the league. So I think Tatum was an excuse for Dems to not make a trade with the Lakers. Next question here comes from Gray the Band. Hey, Anthony, where do the Lakers go from here now that the deadline has passed and we don't have AD? It's got to be tough for the team to pull together after all that mess. Luke better have some magic, pun intended, up his sleeve. I think there's something to that. Look, at some point, these guys are just going to have to be professional, and they can't allow trade talks to affect 25-plus games, right? At some point, they got to figure some stuff out and actually go out there and represent the team in a way that makes the fan base proud. That said, they are still human beings, and it was good to see that Magic was willing to go out there and talk to these guys and allow them to air their grievances in the Lakers Festivus that was. But, you know, he also went out and said that the media is treating them like babies, right? Which is pretty freaking rich coming from a former superstar who was probably never involved in trade talks. So, like, that was, even in doing the right thing, Magic kind of sort of screwed up, right? Don't say that last part. Just show up. Have a conversation with these guys. Allow them to feel like they're a part of a discussion and move forward and try to get the team to move forward. And you know, we'll see how those things go. I think that Boston win was huge. It would have been nice if the Lakers were able to compete a little bit better against Philly hours before I recorded this podcast. I think Luke's lineup decisions really impacted their ability to compete. So that was a bummer to watch. But yeah, I think everybody involved here just needs to move forward. They need to find a way to be able to move forward. And we'll see if they're able to do that. Next question here comes from McNugget2483. Since Ingram's Duke days, he's always started the season off to a slow start. Is there any way to jumpstart him earlier in the season? Because over the last couple weeks, he's been playing awesome, and a whole season of that would be great. Look, like I remember Mark Teixeira. This is a really random thing to remember, but he, for some reason, it's the Yankees or the Angels or whatever, so I didn't pay full attention, but I remember fans of the teams that he played for were always annoyed that, like, he wasn't good to start the year and then pick things up. Some guys are just like that, that, like, at the beginning of the season, you're trying all these new things, and then as the season goes along, either you become comfortable with those new things or you go back to aspects of the game that you're more comfortable with, and the game makes a little bit more sense to you in that respect. That's just kind of how things go sometimes. The big key is, like, all right, maybe don't wait so long to make those adjustments and maybe guide Ingram a little bit better in the offseason so that those things that he's trying to add to his game don't negatively impact the things that he's already good at. So he's young, so he's going to be inconsistent. But I do think the Lakers need to do a little bit, if he remains a Laker, I think the Lakers need to do a lot more to put him in a better situation to succeed right from the get-go. All right, this is from BronFan331. Hey, guys, I think your podcast is great, and I love listening to your takes. Thanks. You guys really get it. I am a little disappointed that we didn't get AD, but I'm glad we got to keep most of the young core. The Pelicans will really be regretting kicking themselves for come summertime, blah, 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 blah. it sounds like this is a question about what this team is moving forward here. I've made this request in the past, only a few sentences on reviews, because I have to get to all of these. So, but basically the question is, can the Lakers regain that spot that they were at before LeBron got hurt, and JaVale got sick, and now Lonzo was hurt, and all of those things? Do we think the Lakers can regain that footing? I don't think so. I don't. But can they come close to it? Probably. I think maybe at some point they might be able to. I think it's going to, a lot of it's going to come down to whether Reggie Bullock figures things out. And he didn't look great in his first game as a Laker. I think a lot of it is going to come down to how consistently Ingram is going to be willing to do the right things on a basketball court and make him a more valuable teammate alongside LeBron. And then it's going to come down to health, really. Like, there are just some seasons that are snake bitten from an injury perspective. I point oftentimes to the Dwight Mare season, where Dwight was never fully ready to go, and then Powell was starting to show his age, and then Kobe snapped his Achilles at the very end. Like, sometimes those seasons just happen. And I'm hoping that that isn't what's going on here, but, you know, sometimes that's how it goes. So, do I think that they can get back to that level? Probably not, but they might come close. Next question here comes from JR61194. Do you think Beasley really got a fair shake on this team, although may not even be his fault in the first place, as he should have never signed and really didn't fit at all? Beasley's tough because he missed all that time dealing with his mom's sickness, and I'm not going to fault a guy for missing time for that reason. That said, I don't know if he was ever utilized properly. Like, Lance was just kind of handed the keys, and I didn't really understand why they did that with Lance and were kind of hesitant to get Beasley out there. So in that respect, probably not a full-on fair shake. We'll see where Beasley ends up. I think he makes a lot of sense for, like, Houston, just with his quick decision-making ability, and if he can get back to spacing the floor. That was the big thing with Beasley that he never really showed for the Lakers, was any type of willingness to shoot a three-pointer. It was really weird. He kept passing up on those shots, and I think that impacted what type of value he brought to the Lakers. But we'll see. We'll see what he's a super talented guy. I just don't know if mentally he's capable of consistent production in the NBA. Last few questions here. We have quite a few more to go. Righteous Man asks, "Hey, Anthony, great show. Keep it up." Thanks. Quick question. If KD goes to the Knicks or anywhere else and we trade for AD in the summer and lose our young core, wouldn't we have a real shot at a championship? I just do not see the Knicks having a good chance even with KD due to the fact that they're the Knicks. Fair point. The rest of the West is competitive but not as invincible. And most importantly, the Warriors would be substantially weaker. So to sum it up, isn't it worth it at that point? Even if it's the same offer we provided, two picks, not four. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to that. And I think that's why the Lakers would make that trade. I think they'll start not at the lowball offer that they made initially with, like, Lance and whatever else was going on there. But I do think they'll try to go there, and they'll maybe take one kid off the table. They'll hold tight to saying it's only going to be two picks, and they'll try to negotiate that way, while also keeping an eye out for an ear or an ear out for what other offers are coming across. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. The one thing, I mean, it's hard to tell. I don't think Del Demps will be in charge of this deal or in charge of the rebuild if and when that time comes. So you never know how new executives handle this kind of thing. But if it is Demps, basically he's a Spurs guy. And what they do is they field a bunch of offers. They don't counter offer. And then they go with what they consider to be the best offer. What that means is if you're presenting an offer for Anthony Davis, you have to make the best offer that you can right from the get-go, or else another team out there is going to leapfrog you in the standings of most likely to get Anthony Davis. So I think the Lakers are going to have to make some type of an offer. It's going to have to be a fair one right from the get-go. And if they don't, they're going to miss out. Next question here comes from Going AWOL. These guys really love the team, even when they're being super negative. It's cathartic and helps me process my own frustrations with what the team and front office is doing. Anthony, question for you. While I'm totally rooting for them to get in, is there a world where the Lakers missing the playoffs is a silver lining or even good? A guy like KD can be more of a savior. LeBron gets a full summer of rest, and their draft pick is a lottery asset with more value in a deal. If you put things just like that, and it's completely in a vacuum of, like, KD looks at the Lakers as more intriguing because he's helping LeBron get the Lakers back to where the Lakers should be, then okay, maybe. I still don't think he wants to play with LeBron. I also don't think KD is really well suited for a major market team like the Lakers or the Knicks. I'm not going to include the Clippers in a major market thing because they don't have very much media covering them. I think he should go to the Clippers. But for the Lakers missing the playoffs would only be a silver lining if they legitimately take a look in the mirror and change the way that they handle stuff. No more nepotism. Open up your candidacy pools for jobs that become available in the organization. Invest money in areas that you could take advantage of the vast resources that you have at your disposal. Like, those are things that, like, if the Lakers miss the playoffs and they ask tough questions of themselves and answer them correctly, then maybe that's the silver lining there. But the Lakers are an old dog, and they seem to really pride themselves on this whole idea of family, and the negative side to the family coin is hiring nepotistically. And if the Lakers don't adjust or evolve to the modern NBA, then it doesn't matter if they make the playoffs or not. They're still going to fall back on the same bad habits, and they're going to give themselves an inherent ceiling that they won't be able to break through. This is from Alan PM. Luke Walton gets a lot of heat for bad losses. He doesn't get much, if any, credit for wins. He has everything going against him. Oh, at Boston, he has everything going against him. Trade deadline drama, bench gate, yelling in the locker room, 42-point loss against any, blah, 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 blah. And he goes in and he gets a win. Why does Stevens get a pass? Or why is Luke Walton not considered a top young coach? Why is Stevens get a pass? Luke is a big part of the young core as the young core themselves. So I was the one who presented the idea of Luke being a part of the young core. But those same rules apply to Luke as they do to the young core. The Lakers don't have time to sit there and figure out if this young core is going to figure it out. They don't. They have LeBron James on the clock. And now either if you want to, this will never happen, but the Lakers could trade LeBron, right, and give their young core more time, but that would be probably a mistake, right? Because now you're prioritizing the young core over an all-timer. I don't agree that Brad Stevens gets a pass. Like, all of today being Sunday was spent slandering Boston and Brad Stevens and all of that, and it was pretty pervasive throughout Twitter. So I think that, you know, this idea of he gets a complete pass, I think it was true in part for like some of his playoff failures. But as of right now, I think that patience has grown thin. And if Boston doesn't figure it out, he will probably catch a ripe of crap. So we'll see. And then in terms of like, why is Walton not considered a young coach? Because he coaches LeBron. That's why. All right, next question here comes from Saul the Kid. We have three more to go. Hey, Anthony, have you watched High Flying Bird on Netflix? If so, can we get your thoughts? If not, I recommend you watch it. It's about an NBA rookie during a lockout year. I haven't watched it. I'll keep an eye out for it. And if I have time, I'll hop on here and talk about it another time. This is from G Julio 1. Do you think now that the trades didn't go through, it would be easier for everyone to fall into their roles and understand that no one is bigger than the team? And do you feel like Lonzo will get any backlash for for letting his dad speak up for him? No, I don't think he will. He hasn't caught any yet, so I don't see that happening. Do I think the Lakers can fall back into roles now that the trade deadline has passed? Sure, maybe. But they have to talk, they have to communicate, and they have to find roles that actually make sense for them. Last question. Lakers should re-sign Huertas. Hey, Anthony, love the show. Writing this after Zoo put up 12-9-3 in his first game as a Clipper. You, Pete, and Harrison briefly touched on the Zubats for Muscala trade on your last podcast, but I'm sure the vast majority of your listeners would appreciate you going in on Magic and Rob. The level of incompetence they have displayed since signing LeBron is baffling. No player in the NBA generates more open threes for his teammates than LeBron, yet Majinka made the brilliant decision to purposefully surround him with non-shooters. As a result, the Lakers are 26th in the league in 3-point percentage, but now, as if that wasn't bad enough, they try to correct their mistake by trading Zubats, a 21-year-old who has clearly turned a corner this season, for Mike Muscala, a stretch five who was shooting a sizzling 34% from three this year. And please don't say that these moves don't matter because they got LeBron. LeBron wanted to be in LA. He was going to be a Laker no matter what. No matter who was in the front office, please ether these buffoons. We've done a lot of that lately, and I think there will be a lot of time to continue to harp on this front office. What I will say is that at least they addressed those problems, right? Now, I think they overpaid in both cases, and Rob Pelinka is supposedly seen as this great negotiator, and in both instances gave up too much for the players that they were getting. Like, Svi Mykhailiuk was seen as a very promising young player who had a very clear path to having a bright future in the Lakers organization. They also attached a second rounder to him to get essentially a rental, who was probably going to hit the buyout market anyway, or at least was going to be replaced, or there was going to be a player like him who hit the buyout market. Wayne Ellington, for example. The Lakers traded for Mike Muscala, and they gave up a starting center, an NBA starter, for somebody who might play 10-ish minutes a game, right? And is mostly a situational utility type of guy. And you know, that's just not good asset management there. And you know, Zubats could have been helpful against Embiid just because he's another big body. And Embiid on Sunday, or a few minutes ago, well, before I recorded this podcast, killed the Lakers. So I want to find out what Rob Pelinka actually does for the Lakers. I would love to find this out. He was supposedly this guy who helps the Lakers avoid tampering charges, and he was going to be the CBA guy for the organization. But it was his miscue that led to the $500,000 fine for tampering. He's seen as this great negotiator, but the Lakers have overpaid on the deals that they've made with teams that required negotiations that were smaller things that Pelinka would, I would imagine, be involved with. So I think if the Lakers don't make the playoffs this year, and it's because of roster construction and Luke Walton was already fired and those decisions had already been made, I think Pelinka's seat starts to heat up a little bit, and for good reason, I think. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. This was a longer one. You guys, again, came through with flying colors to offer up really good questions. I really appreciate that. Like I said earlier in the show, I'm going to keep an eye out or try to figure out a way for those of you who are Android users to get your questions on the show in the same way that iTunes users are able to. But in the meantime, keep sending in those iTunes questions. They help the show. They help me keep the lights on. And I will keep answering those as I always promise to do. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.